Canada's foreign minister was in Washington this week as the clock ticks down to reach a deal on updating the North American Free Trade Agreement that could pass Congress. The U.S. has exempted Canada and Mexico so far from tariffs on steel and aluminum, but tied that to NAFTA talks. Those exemptions are set to expire tomorrow. And that's the end of the line, or what the White House has called a final extension. We're talking about the impact of a NAFTA overhaul on Wisconsin egg exports here in the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Sheila Harsdorf is secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Prior to becoming secretary, she served in the state legislature for more than 25 years. Secretary Harsdorf, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Kate. It's great to be with you.
Well, before we dive into trade and tariffs, let's take a step back and look at the Farm Bill. It failed to pass this month, and we're watching it slated for another vote later in June. Are there any specific changes that you'd like to see made to the Farm Bill before next month's vote?
Well, obviously, there can be numerous provisions that affect us here in Wisconsin. With the dairy industry being a significant, about half of the economic impact that agriculture has on our state, obviously the dairy policy is very important in how it might affect our producers here. As you know, prices have been low for an extended period of time across the board across most commodities, and so obviously we're looking at what we can do to change that direction.
All eyes as well are on NAFTA and this rewrite, but can we talk about what's at stake for Wisconsin agriculture here? What happens if the agreement is eventually renegotiated or if it's abandoned by the U.S. altogether? What happens for egg exports here in Wisconsin?
Well, as we just talked, agriculture is a key component of our economic well-being here in Wisconsin. And, of course, exports play a big part in Wisconsin agriculture. And so we rely heavily on exports here. We rank about the 12th largest value in exports as a state. And so it's important that we maintain the markets that we have. And one of the things that we're focused on at the department is not only maintaining and growing the markets that we have, but also expanding into new markets.
You recently wrote an op-ed in the Winona Daily News arguing for free and fair trade for the agricultural industry in Wisconsin. So what would free and fair trade look like policy-wise?
Well, that's something that, you know, you can take a look at the dairy policy. And you know, we know that, for example, as an example, the trade policies that we have between Canada and the U.S. Does not create a fair situation for our dairy farmers here. And so it's about free trade means, you know, avoiding restrictions, limiting our products, and just taking a look at, in some cases, we may have another importer may look at our products and require a different standard than other countries.
So you're at the roundtable there yesterday. What is the talk among farmers, and what are they watching for here on the NAFTA front and also on China and exports there?
Well, we had a great discussion yesterday, and it was an opportunity to hear directly from farmers as well as processors and others involved in the industry. While there may be differences of opinion on some specific policies, there was solid agreement on the importance of maintaining our trade opportunities, fair and free trade, and you know, recognizing that.
Are you there, Secretary Harsdorf? Wonder if we just got a cut off there. We were talking with. Are you there? We can barely hear you.
Actually, you just cut out there.
Okay, yes. Okay, so you are there. Yeah, carry on. You talking about free and fair trade and in yesterday outcome of yesterday takeaways.
Yes, we had a great discussion yesterday. I'm not sure where I lost you, but it was an opportunity to hear directly from farmers as well as processors and the others involved in the industry. And clearly there's a unified recognition of the importance of maintaining trade opportunities, and a belief that we can also have an opportunity to expand expand into new markets.
Did you find that farmers are very concerned about NAFTA, and in what aspect?
Absolutely. You know, they talked specifically. We heard from a hog producer. We heard from a couple of dairy farmers, and they recognize that, you know, we have some of the most efficient, productive farmers in our state, and they can compete with anyone, provided they're on a level playing field. And we know that a big part of our challenge is to grow the markets. And it's one of the things that we're focused on at the department, not only growing international markets, but domestic markets as well. But the farmers and the processors really were unified in the message of the importance of maintaining and expanding trade opportunities and recognizing that what is talked about at the federal level can have an impact on the markets as well.
Let's look at ginseng for a moment. China is one of the top importers of Wisconsin ginseng. Are you concerned that recent trade disputes with China flaring up, that general uncertainty regarding the future of U.S. trade relations there could threaten that relationship and our market for ginseng here from Wisconsin?
Well, ginseng is one of our specialty crops here, and as you probably are well aware, 95% of the ginseng that's exported from the U.S. actually comes from Wisconsin, and so and China plays a big role. We the exports to China have grown significantly in the last few years, and so that is important. We recognize that they were there as well yesterday, really highlighting the importance of that export market for their crop.
We're talking with Secretary Sheila Harsdorf of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Talking trade and tariffs, Wisconsin ag officials plan to continue working to expand international markets for the state's growers and producers. You can join in with your questions, your insights, 800-642-1234. Are you a farmer? Are you in favor of or against NAFTA? Are there any changes you hope to see with the agreement? And do you hope the U.S. sticks with NAFTA or pulls out of the deal? How would your farm be impacted? 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Secretary Harsdorf, other Wisconsin exports that have new Chinese tariffs are cranberries and pork. How will Wisconsin find a way to nurture its relationship with China, but also be able to make sure that these exports find their markets?
Well, we are doing what we can as a secretary of the department. I'm a member of the National Association of State Department Secretaries and Directors and Commissioners. And so through that organization, we are expressing the importance of trade agreements, fair and free trade agreements. And we will continue to be vocal. I participated in a number of discussions. Yesterday was another effort to really highlight the importance of this issue to Wisconsin agriculture. And our governor will continue to encourage that as well.
So far in this renegotiation of NAFTA, there's been so much talk about the automotive sector. Do you think that agriculture is getting the short shrift? Is it not getting the focus that it needs?
That's one of our efforts in making sure that people understand that and sending the message to Washington for those that are actually doing the negotiating. And I think, one of the things you mentioned, the steel tariffs, that actually affects agricultural producers, farmers as well, and that was pointed out yesterday. And so these issues have far-reaching impacts on the jobs here, and that's why it's important that we're vocal in making sure that those doing the negotiating understand the impact. And, you know, we recognize, too, that depending upon, different issues affect different states differently. Obviously, exports are vital to Wisconsin agriculture.
Well, Secretary Harsdorf, thanks so much for making time for us.
You bet. Glad to be with you today.
Sheila Harsdorf is Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. We're talking trade and tariffs as Wisconsin agriculture officials plan to continue working to expand international markets for the state's growers and producers. The Wisconsin State Farm Bureau and Farmers for Free Trade held a discussion yesterday. We're talking through the issues here on the morning show. Coming up, we'll have Jim Holt here. He's president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Are you a farmer? Are you in favor of or against NAFTA? Are there any changes you hope to see that come out of the agreement? And do you hope the U.S. sticks with NAFTA or pulls out altogether? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to the conversation after a news update on the Ideas Network. NAFTA talks have focused quite heavily on the automotive sector, less as much on farmers and the impact on agriculture. This as China is reportedly looking to line up other countries against the U.S. in a pending trade war after the White House announced an unexpected move forward on trade tariffs. We're talking about what this all means for Wisconsin exports here on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you farm ginseng or cranberries or raise swine for pork? Have you felt any of the effects of China's tariffs on these products? Have you adjusted your business model? How has 2018 been for your business? Call in 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's bring in Jim Holt now. He's president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, representing District 9, Elk Mound. He's a third-generation Farm Bureau member and a farmer who grows corn, soybeans, and alfalfa on 460 acres of land south of Elk Mound in Dunn County. He also raises beef steers. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you for the invitation. Happy to join you.
Well, you were at yesterday's roundtable discussion on NAFTA and Wisconsin agriculture. What were the biggest takeaways?
Well, I think there's a across-the-board concern in the agricultural community about trade in total. Yes, NAFTA is very important, but trade with all countries around the world and how impactful it is on the prices that I and my colleagues in farming receive for our products.
So as you look around the world, what is it like for farmers today to export their products from Wisconsin?
Well, exports are extremely important to Wisconsin, and in particular Mexico and Canada because of their proximity to us. Many of our crops, we export 15, 20, 25% of the total production in the country. So that has a very large impact on the demand we feel in this country and therefore then the prices that we receive in the end.
So what are you and your fellow farmers and the Farm Bureau Federation members think about the potential changes to NAFTA and how closely are you watching that?
Well, I would say we're watching them very closely. Just by their nature, trade negotiations cannot be done in the open public, and they're historically always have been done by the administration and other countries in a private setting, and then the results of their negotiations come before Congress for approval. So we understand that it can't be done in the open public to have these negotiations, but the rhetoric around it creates this concern because just the discussion of these items causes changes in our markets and the prices. So it's kind of an everyday thing, but the concern we have right now is really some lack of certainty because with all the discussion going on, we don't know from one day to the next week if our markets will be strengthening or weakening.
We were talking with Secretary Harsdorf just before and talking about what it means for free and fair trade, what it means to be on a level playing field. What does that look like to you as a farmer?
I think every commodity probably is somewhat different. And so it's hard to give a clear definition of what free and fair is sometimes because countries around the world, including the U.S., have different tariffs on different products. They have different sets of requirements as far as the quality and the method of production and what those different products bring to us. So for the individual farmer or individual consumer, it's kind of a confusing nightmare. We rely on our government to negotiate, as we call it, free and fair trade with other countries so that producers, whether they are in the European Union or Australia or China or the U.S., can openly produce and sell their products around the world in a fair way.
Do tariffs vary widely from one commodity to the next?
I don't have a deep knowledge on that, but I believe there is a wide variety in the way tariffs are placed on products by different countries, yes. It's not just a blanket, everything is the same. It can vary by commodity quite a bit.
Well, let's look at soybeans and corn. In your neck of the woods, the possibility of changes to NAFTA has had effects on both of those crops. In 2017, Mexico bought 10 times more corn from Brazil than it did in 2016 because of concerns of the NAFTA renegotiations that could jeopardize its trade relationship with the U.S. American corn imports to Mexico. So where do you see the issues there in the area of soybean and corn?
They are concerning, but I would caution our whole audience to be a little skeptical when we use percentages, because I don't know exactly how much corn Brazil has typically sent to Mexico. If it's a small amount, 10 times might not be a big deal,
whereas
a large amount it would be. But, yes, yeah, so with Mexico's proximity and our ability to move grain there, not only in ships but certainly by train and other methods, it's been a great market for our farmers to be able to market corn and other products, dairy products as well, into Mexico. And so potential changes are concerning, and it creates more volatility in the markets that move each day. So it gives us a little more heartburn in managing our risk, I would say.
What about transportation costs in getting these products, these commodities, to markets?
That is a cost, of course, that's out of our control as growers of these products, and it's going to change over time. I can't speak to it, especially that it's changed a lot recently, but it is a major cost for us. And when you have a commodity like corn or soybeans that's going to a country, you still have to find the most efficient way to move that product.
Are we producing too many of certain products where there just aren't enough markets in the world that we can get into or that need our products here from Wisconsin?
I guess you could make that assumption at some time, because prices have been lower in the last 2 or 3 years than they were 5 years ago. And yet there's a natural cyclic part of this whole industry of trade, particularly in agriculture. And while we're producing more than the world in general needs right now, 5 years ago it was very different, in which there was a huge demand for many of these grains, and we were struggling to produce as much as people wanted. I'm guessing that over time the markets will change in some direction or another, and so that it won't always be true that we're overproducing.
Jim Holt is with us. He's president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, representing District 9, Elk Mound. He's a third-generation Farm Bureau member, a farmer who grows corn, soybeans, and alfalfa. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Are you a farmer? What are you growing? What are you watching for as you look to export your crops? And what markets are open to you? What about trade and tariffs? What concerns you there? Are you changing your business model as you look to figure out what to plant? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. And also looking closely on NAFTA. Has NAFTA helped or hurt U.S. farmers? And what about your own business? What's your opinion on the farm bill? And do you think any major changes need to be made to it before lawmakers vote on it next month? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Jim Holt, do you find that farmers are on the same page when it comes to trade and tariffs, or are there varying opinions out there?
Well, there's clearly varying opinions. There's the quip about five farmers in the coffee shop, you probably have six different opinions. Farmers are very much independent business people and are free thinkers, and so there's room for lots of opinions.
What are those opinions like? Where do farmers clash when it comes to trade?
I don't know that I would use the word clash. I would say
or disagree, friendly disagreement.
Differently, certainly, and have different perspectives of how trade is positive or not. Myself and our organization in general have been strong supporters of trade for a number of years. We look at NAFTA, and we have a lot of discussion about it today. But if you were to look at the amounts of many ag commodities that were exported prior to the NAFTA agreement, it's been a great improvement in both the volume and the price of those. So it takes kind of a long-term perspective. It's hard to really get an accurate view if you only take a short-term perspective.
Do you find that farmers absolutely need to look at global markets in order to survive, to stay relevant today? Or can they find places for their commodities here in the U.S.?
That would probably depend on if you can create a particular product that differentiates itself. If you're producing, as you described, a commodity, the commodities of corn or soybeans or milk or wheat, they're very similar across the whole production scheme. And so then you have to, it's different than if you're producing a product in which you can differentiate it from any other like it so that it can have its own supply and demand system. You mentioned global markets, and we are clearly in a time in which what happens in the European Union or Australia or China instantly impacts our situation here as far as demand and supply. So, yes, farmers have to manage the risk of global markets, and it can also be sometimes we portray it only as negative, but it can be very positive.
What do farmers think about value-added agriculture and this ability to turn their commodities into something else before they take them to market to add value to them?
That's clearly one of the strategies a number of people use to create a better market and create a better opportunity for their business. Value-added is certainly not a new process, and I guess there's many definitions of it, but even the ethanol industry could be considered very much a value-added industry where it takes corn and in most cases then converts it to high-quality animal feeds or fuel or other things. It's a very active area.
Yeah, and ethanol has also been a very controversial, taking corn and making it, putting it into those products. Is it a double-edged sword there as to when value-added agriculture crosses a line?
I don't know that I would say it's double-edged.
Okay.
The ethanol industry has been a huge boom for the corn growers. If we didn't have the ethanol industry, our supply and demand for corn would be very, very different than it is today. And it is debated, obviously, as you indicated, about the value of it or the overall way it's viewed. But I would say that value added in general has been a positive part of the industry for many people.
In terms of you being a corn farmer, has the impact of value added in corn farming made an impact on your business decisions on your own farm?
I would say anything that impacts the price that I receive for my product or the cost I incur to grow those crops does have an impact on my business, yes.
So turning to the Farm Bill, which is slated for another vote in June after it failed to pass this month, what are you looking at there? Are there changes that farmers have talked about that they're hoping to see in the bill?
Again, there's a wide variety of views on the different components of the Farm Bill. I think something that the average consumer may not recognize or be aware of is that a large portion, probably two-thirds or three-quarters of it, of the spending in the Farm Bill has nothing to do with farm programs. It has everything to do with food programs, the SNAP program, and others like it. So while the discussion about the Farm Bill is quite active, it's not as easy to understand just by thinking of it as a agriculture bill, because it is very much a food bill in addition. And there is the fact that, as you said, it didn't fail to pass recently. And there's a whole lot of different points of view by people, whether it's in the food provisions of it or the ag provision of how it should be changed or kept the same.
In the ag area, do you find that it's pretty unwieldy to have so many components in the Farm Bill wrapped up into things that have an agriculture component but not exactly tied to growing crops?
It is very comprehensive and wide-ranging, so I think your description is very accurate. There are some parts of it that are more, universal than others, like how is crop insurance being looked at? How does the government impact the incentives for farmers in conservation programs? Those are two of the bigger ones, and there's a whole host of different issues in the Farm Bill, different, research projects, marketing projects that the U.S. government takes part in to assist farmers.
Do you think lawmakers on Capitol Hill understand the pressures that small farms face today in America?
I think small farms have an effective voice in creating and carrying that message to the legislators. And yet, just as whether you're a small farmer, a medium-sized, or large farmer, they don't walk in our shoes every day, just as we don't walk in theirs. So there is always going to be some level of challenge for lawmakers to understand it, as it would be for them to understand any particular part of the economy. So they receive input from a large number of people, and so it's got to be somewhat of a challenge.
Let's go to Bernie now, joining us from Elkhorn. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, good morning. The problem with the Farm Bill traditionally is that it provides huge subsidies to agribusiness. So it's promoting the use of pesticides and Monsanto sort of practices, which are, instead of promoting sustainability in how our food is created and the quality of our food. So it's basically a huge handout to agribusiness. And, there's no reason the taxpayers should be subsidizing big agriculture at the expense of our health and well-being and organic and sustainable farmer.
Jimmy, your insights there.
As Bree very eloquently said, there are many components of the Farm Bill, and yet I wouldn't characterize it probably the same as he did. Agribusiness doesn't receive direct help from the government that I'm aware of. Maybe in the research area there is some fingers of it. But in general, agribusiness has to create products that are useful to farmers, that pass FDA inspection and are safe to use, and continue to be an important part of the opportunities farmers have to manage their risk. So there's multiple views on this. And also, Bernie used the term sustainability, which is a very difficult term to identify or to decide what it means. There's so many ways that term can be used, meaning different things. And so it's a little bit of a challenge to really identify sustainability as a positive or a negative.
Well, Jim, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Jim Holt is president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation. Coming up, we'll talk with UW-Madison agribusiness professor Brian Gold. Stay with us for a news update on the Ideas Network. The lead NAFTA negotiator for Mexico says he sees a 40% chance of reaching a NAFTA deal before July 1st, Mexico's election day. And it appears that the three NAFTA ministers won't be sitting down anytime soon. But Wisconsin farmers are talking about NAFTA and what trade disputes could mean for the state's ag industry. Groups held a roundtable discussion yesterday in Arlington. We're talking about the implications on Wisconsin ag exports here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a farmer? Are you in favor of or against NAFTA? If NAFTA is renegotiated, how would that change your business model? You can call in 800-642-1234, tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Brian Gold now. He is the Rank Professor of Agribusiness in the Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics at UW-Madison and UW Extension. Brian, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I enjoy being here the last day of May.
Well, your expertise is in dairy farming. What are the potential effects a NAFTA renegotiation could have on Wisconsin's dairy industry?
Well, the extreme would be a disaster. And on the negative side, on the positive side, there isn't really that much to gain, because we've got I think the consensus is that the dairy industry has a pretty good deal with NAFTA, especially with respect to Mexico.
So what in detail do Wisconsin farmers have to win or lose here?
That's a good question. I think we need to put things in perspective that U.S. dairy farmers and Wisconsin dairy farmers are obviously part of that, have a tremendous ability to increase production. And it's that tailored with the fact that it's a very competitive market internationally raises some challenge. To be quite honest, we have too much milk. And that we can tell that by the way the current pricing of milk is. It's putting a significant stress on Wisconsin and U.S. dairy farmers. But we got to realize that we're in an international marketplace. Wisconsin dairy farmers cannot consume everything that we produce. We are in an international and national market. We've got to be concerned about what it costs our purchasers from overseas, what it costs them to purchase butter, cheese, powder, or whatever. It's losing market share in this day and age when we have significant supplies of dairy products coming from the EU and South America is a real problem, a real concern.
Give us some perspective there. How significant are U.S. dairy exports to, say, Mexico and Canada?
Well, I'm looking at some numbers right now. In March of this year, Mexico imported $120 million worth of U.S. dairy exports. The next highest category or country or area was Southeast Asia at 64, followed by China at 55 million, and then Canada at similarly $55 million. So it's $175 million, which probably a little less than half of our value of our dairy exports are going to NAFTA countries. And we also have to realize that our rate of production, because of the productivity of American dairy farmers, our rate of growth in production is greater than our increase in domestic demand. We cannot consume our way domestically, our way out of these low prices. We have to export products. Over the January through March period, about 16% of the solids, if you take all the water out of milk and you look at the solids associated with the exports of manufactured dairy products, that represents about 16% of the solids in the raw milk production in the U.S. If we were to have to keep that, we've had instances in the past where we've had to keep that those exports domestic, it will put a significant downward trend on prices. Mm-hmm. And all dairy farmers out there sure will remember 2009. That was a case where we lost some export markets to New Zealand because they came back from their drought. So that's why I mean there isn't much upside potential. There's a lot of downside potential, and the dairy industry is very concerned that the decision-making going on may put that favorable position in jeopardy. We're very, very concerned about that.
Let's bring in Tom now in Brookfield with thoughts on this. Tom, hi, go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Finally, I really appreciate your guest saying the elephant in the room, which is there's just too much milk. The other thing there is way, way too much manure. You know, 12 years ago, I think Wisconsin had about 50 CAFOs. We now almost have 300, and we are paying the environmental costs on our land and our water. And the big agribusiness really has a hold on our politicians because no one has a political will to stand up to them. But most people don't realize the price we're paying for on water for cheap milk and cheap cheese. And I think that's an elephant in the room that really needs to be talked about.
Tom, thanks for the call. Brian, where do you strike a balance between agribusiness and small dairy farmers?
Well, that's a legitimate question. And on the environmental side, and don't get me wrong, I'm very concerned about the environment, and there continues to be, and there will continue to be a structural change in the profile of the U.S. and Wisconsin dairy industry. But there is room for a whole different, all variety of types of production systems, all the way from grazers to CAFO systems. And there are trade-offs, and that's part of the political economy of getting the farm bill through and negotiating fair trade. And just let me diverge a little bit, if I may. Economists like to put together models to represent reality, because there's a lot of extraneous things out there that we can ignore and just get down to the most important factors. And we, from an economic theory perspective, if there's not free trade, let me back up. If there is free trade, both sides can win. If there's a pullback from free trade, there's going to be a loss on both sides. And I think the negotiators have to realize that free trade improves the welfare of all parties.
Let's bring in Kenneth now, who's waiting in Gilman. Kenneth, hi, what's on your mind?
Good morning. I am a dairy farmer of 40 years experience, and I've been through many of these farm bills, none of which has ever worked to help out the small dairy farmers. I have seen the decline of our farms around our area because these CAFOs are being built up, and they keep the prices low, paying immigrant laborers low wages while they drove away the farmers that were farming. The youth don't want to really farm anymore because there's no money in it. They've heard the people complaining for years about how, you know, they're just not making any money on the farm. Lots of people would like to be farming small farms, though. With this NAFTA, when that was put into effect, it ended up causing many of the farmers in Mexico to lose their markets. So then many of them were available to come here to work cheaply on these CAFOs. And it's just a constant building up of those and eliminating of the small farmers. And I would contend we will never export our way to profitability.
Kenneth,
is that what we should do, is starting to limit the processing of this milk? We don't process every tree in Wisconsin, so why should we process every pound of milk? We should be limiting the amount of milk each farmer, small or large, can be sending to market so that we reduce this inventory so it's not that darn old elephant hanging over us.
Kenneth, how have you managed to stay in business?
Well, what we've done is gone to organic farming, and then besides that, we got into what we call grass milk program, where we feed our cows no grain, and consequently the milk that our cows produce is a healthier milk with a ratio of the omega-3 fatty acid to the omega-6 unhealthier fatty acid to be 1:1. Whereas in conventional milk, wherever animals get grain, even if it's organic, it's about 1 omega-3 to 5 omega-6, the unhealthy fat.
Kenneth, thank you so much. I want Brian to jump in here.
Well, Kenneth gave a great example of how small producers can still exist in the age of CAFOs. He's differentiated his product. He's got a niche market. It generates higher prices to meet his higher cost. Being smaller operation, he's going to have a higher cost. And if he's a grass-fed operation, he's going to have seasonality in production. It's exactly what small farms have to do. They cannot compete all the time in terms of cost. Sometimes you can, given there's not one type of dairy operation. But again, developing your own unique production characteristic, and a lot of producers are doing that, is a way to survive. But there is, again, a place for all different types of dairy producers. And Kenneth also raised a point, which I've started to hear in my travels throughout Wisconsin, is talking about what sort of the dairy equivalent of the four-letter word, supply management.
Mm.
We have supply management in Canada, and obviously that raised a lot of issues last year with what happened with grassland. But I'm starting to hear more and more, and I'm glad to hear Kenneth say that we have too much milk. And the one problem I have with his statement is I can't expect a dairy farmer to produce milk and not get paid for it. That would be unfair. That's like having GM produce cars and not allow them to sell what they produce. That wouldn't be fair to the producer. So in contrast to what Kenneth said, I think we have to export. We have to export in addition to looking at on the supply side. Exporting, we're dealing with demand. We have to look at that supply side, because if you look at the productivity of U.S. dairy farms and Wisconsin dairy farmers, there's no downturn in the production per cow. We produce over 22,000 pounds of milk a year per cow, and there's no sign of that declining.
But limiting production would also really impact markets.
It would impact market. It would be a structural change. It would be a big change from what we currently exist. And let's be honest, with the composition of the House and Senate and POTUS, there will be no chance of that happening.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for joining us and giving us your insights.
Okay. Thank you again. I hope to talk to you down the road.
Brian Gould is the Rank Professor of Agribusiness in the Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics at UW-Madison and UW-Extension. We started the hour on trade with Sheila Harsdorf, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. We also spoke with Jim Holt, President of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation. This hour of the morning show was produced by Colleen Leahy and the Ideas Network Director Cheryl Gasser. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation on tariffs and trade, you find it on the Ideas Network.